That moment when we all hear about the woman naked at the Carmel Library, it's Carmel, California, it's Carmel, Indiana. We all hear about the naked woman at the library. We all immediately go to Google to go see who this person is. Yes, I'm in that camp. No, I'm not Tony Katz. I'm Andrew Langer, in for Tony today. Lots going on the show today, jam-packed as we have been. Not sure if we're going to get a call from Tony today, but we've got Matt Himes from Align, which is part of the Blaze Empire. We've got Gregory Wrightstone from the CO2 Coalition talking about energy and climate change. Jim Edwards from Conservatives for Property Rights joining us. John Schweppe from the American Principles Project. Commentator Mel Kay and Andre Yanku, who is working on interesting issues having to do with intellectual property rights. I've talked a little bit about this on the show the last couple of days. All of those guys joining us. Well, anyway, it has been a very eventful 24 hours, and you know I hesitated to say this. Let me tell you a little bit about me. By the way, yes, I'm Andrew Langer. I'm in for Tony today, in for Tony tomorrow. At @Andrew_Langer on Twitter. I have not been able to resurrect my Facebook, at least not on this computer. On one computer, it's managed to stay open, but so don't message me on Facebook. But if you want to chat with me while I'm on the air, @Andrew_Langer on the Twitter machine. I don't know if I've said this ever to you guys, but I have what I call the reverse Midas touch when it comes to candidates. If I endorse a candidate, if I write some things nice, for the most part, if I write something about a candidate, chances are I'm going to doom that candidate to losing. It's one of those things, right? When I left Maryland and moved to Virginia, I think that allowed Larry Hogan to win his first gubernatorial race. We could talk about the merits of that at another time. And certainly in terms of my taste in candidates, presidential candidates, I tend to support somebody and then something happens to their campaign. So for all of you who are wondering when Nikki Haley was going to finally get out of the race, well, I helped it along a little bit with my reverse Midas touch approach to candidates. I will say this. I voted for Nikki Haley in the primary yesterday, and only because I knew that my casting a ballot for Nikki Haley yesterday was going to guarantee that within 24 hours she was going to get out of the race. And sure enough, that happened. In fact, let's go ahead and hear what Nikki Haley had to say. Jason, let's go ahead and play cut number 17.
Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee when our party convention meets in July. I congratulate him and wish him well. I wish anyone well who would be America's president. Our country is too precious to let our differences divide us. I have always been a conservative Republican and always supported the Republican nominee. But on this question, as she did on so many others, Margaret Thatcher provided some good advice when she said, quote, never just follow the crowd. Always make up your own mind. It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that.
Well, there you go. So very, very short of an endorsement of Donald Trump. I believe she is looking for him to court her in some way, shape or form. Don't count out the possibility of a major public reconciliation. And certainly don't be like the vulture that is our president, Joe Biden, who put out a statement. Let me see if I can find this. I think I tweeted it out earlier. He put out a statement to the supporters of Nikki Haley, essentially just, you know, going down that road of saying, you know, the supporters of Nikki Haley, Donald Trump hates you. He doesn't want you to vote for him. So come and vote for me. No, that's not how it's going to work. Here. This is what Joe Biden had to say. Donald Trump made it clear he doesn't want Nikki Haley supporters. I want to be clear. There is a place for them in my campaign. You know something? I bet there are a lot of Democrats who would take a great issue with that statement, who would certainly disagree. Anyway, on his part, so that's what Joe Biden had to say. President Trump also weighed in. He's weighed in on this. Let's hear what Donald Trump had to say last night when it was very clear that he was going to win almost every race in Super Tuesday, with the exception, I believe, of Vermont. Let's play cut number one.
USA! USA! Well, thank you very much. They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. This is a big one. And they tell me, the pundits and otherwise, that there's never been one like this. There's never been anything so conclusive. This was an amazing night, an amazing day. It's been an incredible period of time in our country's history. It's been sad in so many ways, but I think it's going to be inspiring because we're going to do something that, frankly, nobody's been able to do for a long time.
I don't know about the historical context, whether or not this was some kind of historic victory during the primary on Super Tuesday. You know, Donald Trump won. That's what's important in the end in terms of these primary contests. He went on to say something really interesting, and I had forgotten something about election 2024. Let's go ahead and play cut number two there, Jason.
I read an article yesterday where it said this is one of the finest run campaigns that anybody has ever seen. That's pretty good, right? That's pretty good. It's really a statement. And we have no choice because November 5th, right around the corner, November 5th is going to go down as the single most important day in the history of our country.
You know, it's a situation in which, and I didn't realize, I'd forgotten, guys. I mean, listen, obviously, I know that the election is happening in November. I know it's the first Tuesday in November. I just hadn't actually looked at the calendar to see that it was the 5th of November. And of course, this has great significance historically. I mean, in the same way, you know, that July 4th has great significance, the same way that, frankly, April 15th has great significance, the concept of Patriots Day. In some ways, you know, September 11th, obviously great historical significance, December 7th, 1941. But November 5th, right? November 5th, any of you who saw V for Vendetta, you know who Guy Fawkes was. And November 5th is generally recognized as a day when folks make a statement about their government and about corruption in their government and change. Obviously, we don't want to engage in this, but I remembered remember this poem called The 5th of November. Remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. Guy Fawkes and his companions did the scheme contrive to blow the king and parliament all up alive. Obviously, nobody wants anybody to blow anybody up. But the point is, the 5th of November does have great significance in this regard for heralding or trying to herald change, signaling that the people are very, very unhappy. I haven't pulled it up here. But as most of you know by now, the VA is saying that they are not going to remove that iconic picture. They're denying it was ever a situation. Later on in the show, I'll play you a little bit from Corinne Jean-Pierre. We'll bring this up again. But in the meanwhile, listen, we've got a great show all ahead of us. We got Matt Hines from Blaze. He is the managing editor of Align, which is their lifestyle vertical. I got all kinds of questions for him. But I am Andrew Langer, and this is Tony Katz Today. Someone must have been looking at my Spotify playlist this morning as I've been diving deep into the 90s. I'm Andrew Langer. I'm in for Tony Katz Today. So glad you could join me. Listen, I've been very excited. I got my buddy Robbie, you know, who's over at the Blaze. He reached out to me a couple of days ago, you know, talking to me about the good things that they are up to and proposing a number of different guests. Obviously, that's how we got on Steve Baker yesterday, which was so good. Joining us right now, they do a lot with they've expanded. They're not just doing political stuff. Joining us right now is Matt Himes. He is with Align, which is their lifestyle publication. And I appreciate this, Matt, because, you know, I do three podcasts now. You know, I do a deep dive interview show. I do a fun show with the editor of Real Clear Policy called Andrew and Jerry Save the World. And I do a regulatory focused podcast. But for a while, I was thinking about doing a show called Outside Interests, which was to talk to folks in the political and policy world about the things that they do that are not politics and policy related, because it's important to not be all wound up in the stuff. These are important things, but you got to have some outside interests, don't you, Matt?
I couldn't agree more. Thank you, Andrew. It's nice to be here. It's funny. I've been starting to do that. The Super Bowl, I asked Rod Dreher for a gumbo recipe, as an alternative to chili, and he was happy. I think he was happy to be asked something like that.
Sure,
you know, that's not the usual. It's important to fight this fight, but we also have to just kind of live our lives.
Every guest I have on my interview show, The Lunch Hour, that's my last question: is what their outside interests are. I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, you got to have outside interests.
Yes. Yes, and you need to talk to folks about what they are. I mean, that's the thing. It for me, I got the idea in a couple of different places. You know, finding out that a guy who works on tech policy plays harmonica in a blues band, and somebody else plays guitar in a band, and somebody else is really into photography. I mean, all of these things. I do competitive barbecue. Folks are shocked to find out about Tony, Tony, who I'm filling in for. You know, he was generous enough to let me write the section of his book on barbecue about ribs, because I'd written that thing. But I want to get into this line, which is really interesting. Really interesting essays. I want to start here. Are you someone like me? I now watch Johnny Carson at night almost religiously. I see this piece from the other day, Weekend Watch, both Vengeance and Vintage Carson.
Yes, I love watching the old Carson clips. And now, you know, I say you can go to the website, but they're all over the place. They're
right
on YouTube. And the level of conversation, the level of everyone just kind of being informal and hanging out, it doesn't feel like this scripted 2-minute promotional segment where there's probably some publicist standing by gritting her teeth, making sure you say everything you need to say.
Yes.
I mean, it's incredible. It really takes us back to a different time.
100%. And by the way, if you have Antenna TV, every night at 10 o'clock Eastern time on Antenna TV is a Vintage Carson from either the 80s or early 90s. Friday nights, they go back to the hour and a half ones from the 70s. For us, I got to tell you this, Matt, what my wife and I do is we look at the guests and we try to figure out how old they were and whether or not they are older or younger than we are. Because some of them, you know, are in their 40s and 50s, and they look like they're in their 70s. And it's astounding. I mean, and you get these, again, you're right, these great unscripted moments. Doris Day and Carol Wayne. This clip is on YouTube. It is worth it just to see what Doris Day is wearing. But Carol Wayne, who played the ditz on Carson for so long and then had a tragic ending, but she essentially tries to inject herself into this very interesting conversation about Doris Day's love of animals, and it just falls flat. I mean, it's such an uncomfortable moment that you know that it was unscripted. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Real. Yeah,
yes.
Uncomfortable, but real.
But you do talk about, and the other thing about a line is that it's a lot of cultural discussions, which are also so vitally important, as Andrew Breitbart, who passed away, I want to say, 12 years ago this week. Andrew Breitbart said, rightly, politics is downstream from culture. I like this essay you wrote the other day. If I learn to believe in God, so can Joe Rogan. Talk about that.
Oh, well, yeah, that was that's something that I was reading about Joe Rogan, and you know how he's used to be a staunch atheist, right? And so he's been just thinking about it, and then Jordan Peterson saw that, and you know, Jordan Peterson loves talking about God and the Bible. I'm not sure if he's exactly a Christian believer, but I thought to myself, conversion stories are very important, you know, but because when you look at someone who believes, you just think, well, that's not me. I'm not that way. How do I get there? And it's important to realize that you got to start somewhere. I mean, 5 years ago, I was not it seemed absurd to me.
Right.
And 5 years ago, I kind of bought everything about Trump. I thought, oh, this is going to be the end of America if he gets elected. And when he did, I just thought, all right, I'd rather be one of these people that aren't freaking out, that seem to think it's okay, or at the very least, they're indifferent to it. So I started kind of researching that and understanding their point of view. And through that, I also started thinking about God. And as I say in the essay, I realized that having no beliefs is kind of worse than even than having kind of misguided beliefs.
Sure.
If you're just right. So as I say in the essay, I had a good friend of mine was kind of into some kind of kooky stuff, new age stuff. He said he was a psychic. He said he had past lives. He said he had a psychic bond with Dorothy Stratton, the murder.
Oh, Star Eddie. Sure. Yes.
But he was a very good storyteller and very magnetic. And I realized that, I think he was wrong about some things, but I think his idea that there's more to this world than just the material.
Right.
I think that's true. And when I finally started believing that, that kind of helped me like set me on the path towards rediscovering Christianity.
I am a rational, right brain kind of guy. I believe in science. I believe in logic. I believe in looking at reality as it is and not sort of injecting surreality. That being said, I had a really weird experience where I swear to God I saw a ghost in a Vegas hotel about 10 years ago. And I stand by it. It was not me hallucinating. I hadn't been drinking, at least not heavily, hadn't been on anything, at least not that I know of. But Shakespeare said it best, right, Matt? There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. There's a whole unseen and I am a firm believer that a lot of this may very well have some kind of a scientific background. And though I know we as conservatives aren't supposed to talk about him given how he screwed up things in the pandemic. But, Francis Collins, one of the guys who deconstructed the human genome is an ardent Christian. So, if he can believe, then so can I. To get to the point that you make about Joe Rogan,
many such cases. The Big Bang Theory was created by a Catholic priest.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
God said, "Let there be light," and there was light, and it was good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Hey, before I let you go, and this maybe gets into your outside interest, you miss your Electrolux Model L.
Yes.
Talk to us about why.
I love vacuuming. I was just, it was a real wake-up call. I was surprised. I looked at it. It looks like a just old-fashioned piece of junk. But when I turned it on, I just thought, this thing is 40 years old, and it's working great. And as I say in the article, I suckered myself into thinking, oh, you got to buy the Dyson. You got to buy the top of the line. This is technology. And, I don't. It, to me, it's just the build quality is just so flimsy and plasticky. Whatever claims he makes for it, and it works. But,
sure.
But nothing like that solid metal, workhorse of an Electrolux.
Right, you're going to break it within the course of you vacuuming. I get that. So listen, before I let you go, how do folks find out more about the good work you guys are doing at Align and generally at the Blaze Empire?
Well, if you just go to theblaze.com/Align or blazealign.com.
Okay.
So, blazealign.com, or just go to the Blaze Media and you'll find it. But I would say go to blaze.com, Align, and you'll get to our front page there. And some of the stuff is free. Some of it is on a subscription model now.
Yes.
So we get rid of the ads. And it's like $5 a month or $3 a month if you do it annually.
We got to let you go there, Matt. Thank you so very much. You take care. That was Matt Himes at Matt Himes on Twitter. He's the editor of Align. When we return, guys, who do we got coming up? We got Gregory Wrightstone going to talk about climate change and energy policy. I'm Andrew Langer. This is Tony Katz Today. welcome back, guys. You all know. Well, listen, as we were just talking with Matt Himes, I talked about the fact that I am this, you know, rational, science-based person. And one of the things you all know that I get crazy about is when we engage in policies that are detached from reality, we engage in policies that don't properly assess risk, you know, the unintended consequences of regulation. Like, what happens? New York just found out, for instance. New York found out that when they close nuclear power plants, oh my God, CO2 levels may rise as a result of energy production there. But more to the point, what happens? What are the risks that are associated with making electricity more expensive and making it more scarce? How many excess deaths do you get? What happens when you create super energy efficient HVAC systems? What are the impacts on human asthma that gets caused? The extra hospital visits and deaths that are caused by these things. Joining us right now is Gregory Wrightstone. He's the executive director of the CO2 Coalition. He's the author of the book, A Very Convenient Warming, How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. I mean, this is what we're talking about, right, Greg? I mean, this idea of there are trade-offs, and most folks don't assess the trade-offs. And really what this is there's an overall policy agenda that's being driven here, isn't there?
Oh, you've got that right, for sure. And for example, we've got a lot of these left-leaning states that are enjoying, mainly in the Northeast. Well, it's being done all over, but there's a thing called the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative.
Oh, yeah.
Or REGI. I think there are 12 or 14 states, mostly in the Northeast, that have signed into this. And what they're doing is imposing carbon fees onto their electricity. Anything that's emitting large amounts of carbon dioxide pay this carbon tax. So what they found is what that's doing is actually forcing states out of or businesses that are using that are emitting a lot of carbon dioxide. These are industries. They're moving out of state and taking the jobs with them. So the emissions aren't being produced, let's say, in New York, but they're moving to Ohio.
Sure.
And so the emissions remain the same, but they're just exporting the emissions to neighboring lower energy cost states, and they're losing their export. Not only they're exporting the emissions, they're exporting jobs.
Right.
It's these unintended consequences of this that it leads to economic devastation and destruction. It'll be bad once we do it globally in the United States, across all the states, which we need to fight against. Where are you going to move then? Belize or, who knows, Romania, export jobs, which probably is what would occur.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to me because, again, as we get into it, and by the way, we're talking with Greg Wrightstone from the CO2 Coalition. He's the author of A Very Convenient Warming. You know, the stories that are now coming out, and I love this stuff. Again, one of the trade-offs that I used to, because I used to teach about this at the college level, I used to teach a course on the regulatory process. And one of the things I talked about was, you know, we've created these new and improved tires, all-weather tires, that are really great for getting traction in the rain. The problem is that they then throw up so much water behind the car that it makes it impossible for the car behind that other car to see. So there are other risks that are involved there. You get better traction, but the cars around you can't see it. You know, what we're now learning about everything we want to talk about EVs, and let me digress a little bit more, Greg, for a second. I used to make a joke that compact fluorescent bulbs were from the devil. I don't believe that, but I used to say that if they're, you know, That if the devil wanted to invent a light bulb, he would have invented one that offers bad light, makes you go blind, can cause damage to your skin, and ultimately you cost way expensive, and ultimately you can't throw it out, and if one breaks, you have to call in a hazmat, you know, group. By the same token, I think that these electric cars are in the same vein because, you know, obviously we're finding out they're expensive. They don't work in the cold. They don't have the range that you want them to. You know, somebody can track you with them. Now we're finding out that they not only do they tear up the roads because they're so much heavier than a conventional car, but they also pollute an insane amount because they're heavy. The tires break up faster and release more particulate matter into the air, so they cause all kinds of other illnesses when you breathe in tire bits. Talk a little bit about this.
Yeah. The lithium ion batteries leads to an increase in weight of maybe some 30 to 50% So we've got really heavy vehicles now, and because of the weight added, they're actually looking at in bolstering the roadside barriers, the bump, because they can't withstand the right, and they can't withstand impacts from an F-150 that's electric with lithium ion battery. They're looking at maybe having to replace all of those. We're also looking at for parking garages.
If we
go all electric, now we're going to increase the weight on these parking garages that there may not be designed properly. And we haven't even talked about the fire danger, which is something that terrifies me. I'm calling you from Arlington, Virginia. Yeah. We keep an apartment here. It's a 12-story apartment. There's some 2,000 plus people living there, and there are three levels underneath our building of parking. We see every day I go in there, I see these electric vehicles being charged underneath my apartment. And what we know, these lithium ion batteries just spontaneously combust. Not often, but I mean, it does.
But enough.
It just takes one of these. We've seen where ships transport ships, three of them now. Electric cars, electric batteries have combusted, and they've gone to the bottom of the ocean along with many millions of dollars of luxury vehicles. It's going to happen at some point. I'm not hoping for it, but it's going to happen at some point, and it will be a terrible tragedy.
Listen, there's a reason why certain airports have banned certain electric vehicles from parking in their long-term parking decks. It's for this very reason. By the way, it seems to me in the same vein that with the U.S. Postal Service recognizing Santa Claus and Miracle on 34th Street would validate his identity, it seems to me that if you are an offshoot of the FAA or the TSA and you're able to ban cars from your parking decks, that should be a pretty good recognition that the government itself realizes there's a problem here. Don't you think, Greg?
Oh, absolutely. And not only that, it's just these things are impractical. And especially, yes, we know that the length of charging escalates the time tremendously with really cold weather. We saw that in the latest cold spell where people in Chicago were taking 5, 6, 7 hours for a charge. And the one woman was complaining. She said, "It usually only takes me 45 minutes. 45 minutes? Get out. I've got a Ford Escape, or I call it the Mexican model, the Escape.
Sure.
But if I take more than 3 minutes filling that tank, I get I want a quick fill and I want out of there. I don't want to wait." And again, she was complaining because it usually only takes me 45 minutes. And I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Who wants to do that?
Well, that's
it's just impractical, too. Look at all in the cities where electric vehicles probably would work. Well, we don't probably. They work a lot better there than rural, going long distances. But most people in the cities aren't set up. They're living in apartments. They don't have access to charge their vehicles. It just doesn't make sense. And it's so wrong on so many levels.
Well, what are you guys in the CO2 Coalition are working on these days before I let you go?
Good stuff. Our latest paper is Wyoming and Climate.
Oh, yeah.
CO2 should be celebrated, not captured. We just got back from a week tour of Wyoming where we spoke at three campuses, testified before the Wyoming Senate. And good news, a week after we left, last Thursday, the Wyoming Senate killed $347 million of slush fund the governor was going to use for green energy, for net zero and carbon capture. And the Senator Steinmetz said it was a credit to the work that we did at the CO2 Coalition that bolstered them. They were able to kill this. $347 million of a slush fund to try and solve a non-existent climate crisis. We've got that. My new book, of course, is a very convenient warming. Look for it to go to number one. Just last night, Jordan Peterson retweeted my video trailer of the book. It's now his tweets over 200,000 views, which is like that's just pure gold if you've written a book, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And that just happened last night, so I'm pumped. I'm waiting to see what the ratings will do today.
Well, terrific. Well, Greg, listen, we got to leave it there. Thank you so very much for joining us. Greg Wrightstone from the CO2 Coalition. That's at CO2 Coalition on Twitter. He's written the book, Very Convenient Warming. Go and check that out. Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you.
And listen, when we return, reactions, oh boy, were there reactions to Super Tuesday on the part of the mainstream media. I'm Andrew Langer, in for Tony Katz.